What I'd like to do today is to continue with epoxides and ethers. I do have thiols and sulfides listed as a topic. I've made the judgment call that we'll just heavily reduce that topic since we don't do a heck of a lot with them anyways. If we run out of time to get to them today, we will cover at least the nomenclature and the major things they do. But let's go ahead and return back to ethers and epoxides. Even before we do that, though, some of you are quite perceptive in your studying. Had one student in particular just was insistent wanting to know the answer, which I have not yet found out. But I at least want to acknowledge that some of you are being quite evaluative in what you're learning. Because if you go back to one of the synthesis problems I gave you earlier in the quarter, I had used PBr3, I think it was, to convert that alcohol into an alkyl halide. But somebody came up and said, wait a minute, Dr. Gray, that's a tertiary alcohol. And you showed us a mechanism for PBr3 that was really effectively an SN2 mechanism. So how is it that you're showing SN2 with a tertiary alkyl halide? Well, you can't. There is no such thing for SN2 for a tertiary alkyl halide. So the PBr3 and SOCl2 mechanisms only really work for primary and secondary alcohols. What about tertiary alcohols? Well, there are alternate mechanisms, and I just wanted to have a chance to check with one of my more authoritative texts before I show you which reagents work in which ways with which mechanism in the case of having a tertiary alcohol. But yes, for those of you who that's been bugging, technically, yes, you can't use the mechanism I showed you to react a tertiary alcohol with either thionyl chloride or PBr3. Now, however, tosyl chloride works perfectly fine with a tertiary alcohol because you never touch the carbon-oxygen bond using thionyl or tosyl chloride or mesyl chloride, any of the other sulfonyl chlorides. So on Friday, one of the things we'll come back is to address what happens with tertiary alcohols. Now, let's go back to ethers and epoxides, and let me summarize what we had done Wednesday in lab regarding epoxides, because what we did was, one, learn how to synthesize them, so hopefully everybody is now familiar with MCPBA as the main peroxyacid agent that I've shown you that can convert an alkene directly to an epoxide, and then we had the 1-2 step of doing bromine in water and sodium hydride as a way of making first a halohydrin and then doing an intramolecular SN2 in order to form an epoxide. So any questions on the synthesis of epoxides? Then we saw two different sets of conditions for the opening of an epoxide. And much like many other reactions that we will study that might have a basic version and an acidic version, the behavior is kind of opposite in those two cases. So we had acidic conditions that causes the ring to open up one direction. We had basic conditions that causes the ring to open up in the other direction. And let's just review those two different cases. Now, I'm going to simplify reality a little bit, because it turns out that if you have a primary position versus a secondary position on an epoxide, there can be some complicated behavior that occurs. My memory is that your textbook doesn't speak to that level of sophistication, which is why I'm going to simplify and say, let's just worry about primary versus non-primary positions. And then for those of you who are chem majors, you can learn the more detailed story if you get into a later organic chemistry course. Under acidic conditions, which if I wanted to list it not as a mechanism but as a synthesis, what thing or things do I need to have? What are the reagents for cationic ring opening? You need an acid source. So in many of the cases where we need an acid catalyst, I'm going to use our common acid catalyst, tosic acid. What else? Sorry, what was that? Water or? Not a base. Alcohol. So you can use any generalized alcohol, or it could be water. If it was water, you're going to end up with a diol. If you use an alcohol, you're going to end up with an alcohol and an ether next to each other.
What is the regiochemistry of this reaction going to be? Where is the OH group going to end up? At the tertiary position or the primary position? I think I just heard two different answers, so I'll ask that again. Which one is it going to be? Is the OH portion of this going to end up at the tertiary or primary? Assuming I have an alcohol that I'm going to add in. Primary. And why is that? Well, the intermediate in this reaction is an oxonium ion. And you have two different bonds that could break. And I glossed over this a little bit when I went over this on Wednesday. I'm hoping that some of you are going back to the notes to review this. But I thought I'd say this one more time, take a couple of minutes if we really had some questions about this. To cover why is it that the ring opens to the right? Because if this was an SN1 style mechanism, what would happen next is one of the carbon-oxygen bonds would break. You'd form a carbocation. The carbocation could then be attacked. What is the evidence then that this is not the way the reaction occurs? Well, if you look at the example we did on Wednesday, I drew stereocenters in. In this case, I'm focusing on just regiochemistry. Where does it end up? But it turns out that you're going to have overall anti-addition to the alkene. If you take an alkene, convert it to an epoxide, and then open the epoxide, you're going to end up with anti-addition, which means that whatever attacked the ring was coming from the opposite direction of where the ring was. If this tertiary carbon ever did form a carbocation, then you would expect to have attack from both the top and the bottom, which is not what occurs. Since that's not what occurs, that's the evidence that you do have a simultaneous attack on that ring. Why is it that it's that particular bond that opens, though? Even if it's concerted, why is it that one? Well, because it's not an equal three-sided triangle like this drawing deceptively makes it out to be. And that's because the bond to that tertiary center is weaker. Because if it were to break, the positive charge that would form there would be more favorable. Now, this is a phrase that makes some people scared, but one way you can think about it is potential energy. There's a difference in potential energy of those two bonds. One can more easily break than the other because the intermediate you end up with is more stable for one than the other. So let me just make a comment about the fact that this is concerted, which we can tell by the stereochemistry. And then I already wrote down that explanation of that being the longest bond and therefore the weakest, but does anybody have any questions about that? All right, so let me just write down that comment about stereochemistry. So if a carbocation formed, the carbocation could be attacked from two sides, which, not in the specific case, but in general, potentially forming two products. Only one product forms, and so the ring does not open independent of the attack of the nucleophile. Let me just highlight. This is the cationic case. And you notice that the ether is at the more substituted position. Let's quickly review the anionic case then, because I want to show you an additional reagent that could undergo this anionic mechanism. So Wednesday, we saw an alkoxide being used. How would I write the reagents that would be needed in an anionic reaction? Not an alcohol this time, because an alcohol is not a strong enough nucleophile. So how could we make an alcohol stronger? What could we use instead? An alkoxide. So we use, I'll say in general terms, NaOR. So take an alcohol and deprotonate it. You would be allowed in synthesis to just jump directly to something like this. You don't have to take an alcohol, show sodium hydride, deprotonating it, because some alkoxides you just buy out of the bottle. So start with alkoxide, but notice I put a 1 there. Why? What's the 2? Acid, and which instead of showing tosic acid, you could show H+. But you got to be careful about in real life what acids you use, because if, for example, you use something like nitric acid under the right conditions is an oxidizing agent, and you might not want to oxidize the alcohol that results here. If you had hydrochloric acid under the wrong conditions, hydrochloric acid can react with an alcohol to make an alkyl halide. That's a reaction I'm going to show you when we cover tertiary alcohols on Friday. So H plus, normally what's used is maybe you could use sulfuric acid or even hydrochloric acid, but if it's in really, really dilute proportions, so you just barely neutralize the solution. Yes? Acetic acid is often a good choice. If you got a super strong base, you could even throw baking soda at it, because a super strong base can deprotonate baking soda even. Yes? Tosic acid could work, but it's not the best choice in this case, because it is a bit pricey to be used as a neutralization agent. This isn't just a catalyst in this case, you're actually quenching the reaction. So I'd actually say not TSOH in this case. It would work, it would just be kind of a waste. So the main reason for reviewing this again, besides being able to show you the other reagent that works with this, is to review the regiochemistry. In this case, where is the ether going to end up? The more substituted or the less substituted position? Now the ether is going to end up at the less substituted position, and that's because of sterics. That means that this really acts like an SN2 style mechanism, which is a concerted mechanism. Now the question I just asked myself in my head, which my other self then will have to go and answer it later on, is what if both sides of the epoxide are tertiary? Will the ring open? I believe the answer is yes, because the ring itself is unstable. But before I declare that as fact, let me go try to verify that. So let's see. Ether at less substituted position. Now, what is this other reagent that can open an epoxide ring? Well, actually, I'm going to show you 2 reagents. One, you've learned previously, just in a different way. Lithium aluminum hydride. Which, for the moment, we're going to write the mechanism much like I might have used the hydrogen before, the hydride, and just showing it attacking. That's not the complete story, though. And again, this is one of those topics that will come up Friday during our synthesis workshop. It's the fact that the aluminum and the boron in lithium aluminum hydride and sodium borohydride can complex with oxygen. And that complexation, meaning forming a type of system, a bond, well, not necessarily a bond, association, that can assist the attack of hydride. Someone asked me, well, for these reductions, can we just use sodium hydride? No, because it doesn't work quite the same way. So I've oversimplified the mechanism for the moment, but that's the same type of cascading form of lie that chemistry instructors always use. We tell you, oh, this is what an atom looks like. Until the next time around, I said, no, no, really, that's the simple story. Here's what it really looks like. And then you go take a physics class. It's like, oh, those chemists. No, this is what it really looks like. So we'll learn the real story of H minus later. But for right now, the simple mechanism is just like what I showed you on Wednesday. The hydride attacks the less substituted position, pushes the ring open. Notice that synthetically I wrote two steps because it's the same situation. You use something super-duper basic like sodium hydride or lithium hydride, you're going to end up with an alkoxide as a product. And then there's therefore a secondary step where a protonation occurs. So notice we've therefore effectively turned an epoxide into just an alcohol. I wouldn't necessarily make a separate flashcard for this, because it's an identical mechanism. Now, that's your personal choice, though. If you'd like to make a new flashcard and that works in your system studying, do it. If you do better by just generalizing to the types of mechanisms we learn, do that. Whatever works for you. Questions about this lithium hydride reduction? Then the other reagent that works. And there's an extraordinarily sneaky reason why I'm showing you this, besides the fact that it happens. Remember last quarter we talked about deprotonation of alkynes? And we went a couple of times through the idea that an alkyne proton is more acidic than an alkene, which is more acidic than an alkane due to the hybridization of the anion that results. Well, this thing's still pretty darn basic, isn't it? Anybody happen to remember the average pKa of an alkyne? 25. Ooh, yes, 25. Anybody know the average pKa of an alcohol? 16. Notice how many times I've been mentioning, if not writing down, the pKa of an alcohol. When do you think we're going to come to the point where we're going to start making you memorize pKa values? Yeah, it's coming. So, if we had an acid that was pKa 25 versus an acid that's pKa 16, and we can have one or the other as a conjugate, well, what situation would you have? Well, if you had an alcohol and an alkyne, the alkyne anion is going to be able to protonate an alcohol. That's kind of a side story. What I'm really getting at is this thing is basic, more basic than an alkoxide, and if it's more basic than an alkoxide, why can't it do the same exact reaction that we've seen up above? And there's no reason it can't. Now, be careful drawing triple bonds. It is so frequent that people leave carbons out because of misinterpreting how to draw the triple bond. Either side of the triple bond is its own carbon. And so notice that I had to draw a line to the triple bond from the position where the epoxide used to be attached. Because if I didn't, that means I just lost a carbon. So let me circle that and say, careful how structures with triple bonds are written. Now I won't finish this, but it's just a one step to finish. You would again have hydrogen, weakly diluted H plus, be used to protonate that oxygen. So all three the same mechanism, whether you use lithium aluminum hydride, and this is called an acetylide ion. So whether you use lithium hydride, acetylide, or alkoxide, they're all the same mechanism. Yes?
What does it do to be diluted?
Well, imagine especially if you had the case of a double bond, not a triple bond. With a triple bond, it's actually not as much of a problem. But if you had a double bond on a compound and you threw strong H plus at it, the double bond's going to react. So if you want to just make sure you barely put enough acid in to get that into an alcohol, that's a different procedure than if you want to make the double bond react.
we're going to actually come across those problems, those situations, as we start to get more into multi-step synthesis. Which, this is kind of an out there synthesis, but I just want to show you the type of thing we're eventually going to be able to come up with. Which, this one example, I'm going to work in the forward direction, which is we're, got 1 minute of class time left. But, let's say we had the following. Let's say we had propene. Now let's do one step better. No, I just want to show you, because you haven't seen a big, long, nasty, oh my God, he doesn't really want to know this, does he? Kind of synthesis. Propane. And I think of this just because I was back visiting my family in Texas, and if any of you ever seen the program King of the Hill, I can't watch that program without hearing the word propane and thinking both of this job here and home back there. So, propane, is it a reactable molecule? No. But what one reaction last quarter did we learn? Radical halogenation. That could take that, and because bromine is so much more selective than chlorine, we could end up largely with this alkyl halide. Can I turn that alkyl halide into an alkyne? Not directly, but what functional group last quarter did we learn could be converted into an alkyne? So we need a vicinal dihalide, don't we? Where could we get that from? An alkene. Where could we get an alkene from?
By using T-butoxide. That gets us to the propene, which we can then react with bromine without water to get our vicinal dihalide, which we then react with two equivalents of sodium amide to make the alkyne.
Now, what if we did a divergent synthesis?
We take the alkene up from above and in a separate pot react it with MCPBA, which will make an epoxide. We'll take the alkyne, use yet one more equivalent of sodium amide to deprotonate it to make an acetylide ion. You can then throw both of these molecules together. To make this alkoxide with just a little H plus, then we can turn into this molecule.
Now, look at where we came from, propane. Look at what we ended up with. An enol. So if I were to give you a problem like this, yes, you would be shown just the product here, the enol. And you'd be shown propane, and you'd be asked, how do you get from one to the other? Am I going to ask a problem like this on the exam? No, but I will on the final. This is our goal for Chem 12B. So that's what our first workshop on Friday is, that we're going to start practicing, not nasty problems like this. There's no point in me showing you problems just like this because you can't learn that way. At least not without difficulty. So we'll start with simpler cases first, but we're going to be building up to something like this by the end of the quarter. Yes?
I need to
hurry up and decide. I'm still debating on whether or not to push it off by a day. So I will announce on Friday for sure what day the exam is. All right, we're out of time. See you on Friday.